stone could have gone. Arianna, he became convinced, was right. There was not enough time during the battle for the enemy to have carried the massive cornerstone away. Yet, it was also clearly not hidden anywhere in the castle, which had been thoroughly searched by many generations of kings, queens, princes, and princesses, as Nestor's note attested. "Phaedrus?" Corin asked one night, as he cleaned up the wizard's dinner plates. "Do you know about the cornerstone of Asidor?"
"Oho! Is that where you've been sneaking off to, my curious little friend?"
the wizard asked with a raised eyebrow. "You don't know?" Corin asked, surprised. Didn't wizards know everything?
Well, yes, of course I did. Phaedrus lied. I was waiting for you to speak to me. I suppose every young person in the castle gets pulled into that fool's errand eventually. Don't worry, it's harmless fun, and you can learn a lot in the process.
Did you ever search for the cornerstone?
Me? Goodness, no. I haven't been that young in many years.
The wizard was lost in thought for a moment.
Many, many years. No, I've never searched for it. Never even been to the old cornerstone chamber. Although I suppose I should some day.
The scrolls say the enemy was not in the castle long enough, before Aldous Trehame drove them away, for the cornerstone to have been hauled away.
That, young Corin, is why it is such a famous mystery.
Melting of winter snow couldn't come fast enough for Arianna, and the cold, grey weather wasn't the only issue weighing on her mind. She was running out of money, keeping her personal guard stationed in the Thralrin woods. The men, although they were helping themselves to game and fish in that dense forest, with Duke Yaron's permission, still needed an enormous amount of supplies for themselves and their horses. Most of the money for those supplies came out of Arianna's personal account, which had almost run dry. Yaron had sent a private note offering to pay part of the cost out of his own pocket, so much he valued the royal troops patrolling his borders. But Arianna had stubbornly insisted that supplies for royal troops be paid for with royal funds, so she had summoned the Royal Chancellor. The Chancellor was an old man, ancient to Arianna's young eyes. He became Chancellor back when her grandfather was King of Tarador, and to Arianna's memory always had white hair and a long white moustache. He had been Tarador's Chancellor for 23 years, serving 2 kings, and now 1 regent. The year since Arianna's father died had aged him, perhaps more than all the other years combined. Yet he had the energy of a younger man, and he was determined to remain in his job at least until Arianna sat on the throne. If that ever happened.
Chancellor Calron.
Arianna bowed slightly in deference to the man's age, and he bowed lower in deference to her royalty.
Please come in, sit down. Would you like a glass of wine?
Wine? No, Your Highness. I am afraid that at my age it goes to my head far too easily.
In truth, the Chancellor rarely drank wine or alcohol of any kind. He preferred to keep a clear head, while wine loosened other people's tongues, and he could listen to things that perhaps should not be said. He pointed to the teapot on the table.
If the tea is hot, I would appreciate a cup.
Tea, for the Chancellor, was far more than a beverage. The time spent placing a cup in front of him, carefully pouring tea from the pot, selecting a lump of sugar, adding a spoonful of cream, stirring the sweetened tea, setting the spoon down on a napkin, and finally raising the cup to his lips and sipping, all gave him time. Time to observe. He needed time to observe the princess, for she had given no hint of what she wanted when she sent the note inviting or summoning the Chancellor. He preferred to know the purpose of a meeting before he walked into the room, to know the purpose so he could plan and assure that he walked out of the meeting with what he wanted, or at least to limit the damage. What he observed gave him no clue as to what the princess wanted, although her clothes, casual by the standards expected of a crown princess, made it clear to him this was no formal matter of state. He also observed several open books on the table, pushed to the side, one book with a plate of cookies on top, and a half-nibbled cookie on a napkin in front of the princess. There was also a scroll on which the princess had been practicing her penmanship. Indeed, tiny smeared dots of ink stained her fingers, which she hadn't washed away before the Chancellor arrived. So, she was relaxed, going about her day, and this particular meeting was not something she had prepared overmuch for. Unless that is what she wanted the Chancellor to think, to throw him off balance, although he did not think she had learned such guile yet.
"You wished to speak with me, Your Highness," he said as he carefully set down the teacup in its saucer.
"Yes, I need to borrow money to cover the expenses of stationing my personal guard in the Thralran Woods. You can arrange a loan from the Royal Treasury."
The Chancellor found the princess to be refreshingly direct. She did not waste time with pleasantries or talking around the issue. She just said what she wanted. Sometimes the Chancellor forgot that the Crown Princess used to be the little girl he bounced on his knee when she was barely able to walk, and she likely still thought of him more as a kindly Uncle Calron rather than as Chancellor Calron. He had an answer ready, for Ariana's mother had already discussed the issue with him, and the princess was not going to like the answer.
"Ah, yes. Unfortunately, Your Highness, your mother has directed me not to release any funds from the Royal Treasury to you. Her words to me were that if you wished to defy her by keeping your guard in the Thralran, you can figure out how to pay for them yourself."
Seeing the crestfallen look on the princess's face, he hastened to add,
"Perhaps your mother simply wishes you to ask her directly. I think that she was rather hurt by your actions."
Having the regent of the land also be the mother of the crown princess made Calron's position between them terribly difficult, with affairs of state getting confused by personal feelings and family business. The princess's face scrunched up with stubborn determination.
"I am not going to go ask my mommy for money. I don't want the money to buy something silly like a new dress. I need the money to protect our borders, since my mother hasn't seen fit to do it properly herself."
Calron couldn't completely suppress a wry smile.
"Yes, your mother told me you would say that. Perhaps this is an opportunity for you to develop your diplomatic skills. When you are queen, there will be many times when you will need to persuade others to do as you wish, rather than merely issuing orders."
I know, you keep telling me that."
She shook her head and brushed aside the curls of hair that cascaded over her face.
"And I will, but not now. I just can't think straight when it's my mother I'm talking to."
"Nor can she when she is talking to you,"
the Chancellor thought, but kept silent.
"Then I shall have to borrow money from one of the merchant banking houses. You can arrange that."
The Chancellor nodded. This, too, he had anticipated, when Kalana told him her daughter could not borrow from the Royal Treasury.
"I can. However, I must warn you, it will be expensive, particularly as you will be borrowing the money for several years."
"Expensive? Why? They know I'll pay them back once I become queen."
Who would hesitate to loan money to the monarch of the realm?
Forgive an old man for rambling on a bit, Your Highness, but I think this is a good opportunity to instruct you about banking and finance. Just a bit, I promise, he added,
but instead of the frown he expected when he mentioned instruction, the princess leaned forward attentively. The prospect of becoming queen in just a few years had made her interested in subjects that had tended to bore her when she was younger.
The banking houses in Tarador get most of the money from foreign lands.
Why? We don't have enough money here in Tarador?
Certainly there are enough coins going around, Your Highness. But the war with Isidore, particularly recently, our needs for grain, war materials, and, well, almost everything, exceeds the amounts available within our borders. To make up the difference, we have needed to buy from foreigners. Even the Royal Treasury borrows temporarily from the merchant banking houses to tide us over during the year until harvest time when taxes are collected. The amount we have to pay to borrow money has been increasing every year since your father died, and those are short-term loans, backed by the full credit of the state.
The cost to borrow is going up, because foreigners are afraid my mother will lose the war?
The fear that Tarador will lose the war does drive up the cost of borrowing.
The Chancellor was uncomfortable with Ariana criticizing the regent he owed his loyalty to.
But mostly, the fear is that the costs of the war, of defending our borders,
he looked the princess in the eye at that remark,
will stretch our resources so much that we will not be able to repay the loans. Or at least, not repay them on time, which is almost as bad as far as the banking houses are concerned. It is uncertainty, you see, that drives fear, and fear drives the cost of borrowing.
You're saying it would be expensive for me to borrow money because people fear the Royal Treasury will be empty by the time I become queen, and I won't be able to pay them?
She had seen the gold and silver in the Royal Treasury vault beneath the palace, and couldn't imagine it ever going empty. And that was only one vault, which she had been told was rather small, as vaults go.
Yes, and there are other fears when the borrower is yourself. This would be a personal loan to you, but paid back with future state funds. That is an unusual arrangement, and the banking houses won't like it.
Ariana's cheeks flushed red.
They think I may decide not to pay them once I am on the throne? They question my honour?
Your honour? No. May I speak frankly, Your Highness?
Always, Chancellor.
Now she was being formal.
In addition to the risk that Tarador may lose the war, or that the war may deplete our finances, with loaning money to you, there are two other risks. First, there is the risk that if the war begins to go badly against us, your mother may be replaced as regent, and that would present the risk of the Trehaim family losing the throne, in which case you will not become queen.
Hearing this, Ariana's face became pale, as if she'd just fallen ill.
And the second reason? She asked, fearing she knew the answer.
Forgive me for saying this, Your Highness, but the second reason is
if I am killed before my 16th birthday.
Unpleasant though it is to think about? Yes, Your Highness. That is a risk that must be considered by any banking house. If you do not become queen, whoever sits on the throne would be under no obligation to repay your personal debts.
Ariana looked out the window and bit her fingernails for a moment while she thought. "Wait here, please, Chancellor." She rose from the chair and walked across the room, through the doorway to her bedchamber, where her maid, Norelka, was discreetly waiting. It only took her a minute to come back, with a thick, red folded cloth in her hands. She sat back down and unfolded the cloth to reveal a gold ring with a large rectangular emerald surrounded by six diamonds. "Would a banking house be happy if they could hold on to this until I repay them?" The Chancellor's eyebrows flew up in surprise.
"Your Highness, royal jewels cannot be used for..."
"Oh, hush, Chancellor. My father's mother gave this to me on my fourth birthday, so it's my personal property. It belonged to her mother. I rarely wear it because it's rather an old style, with that chunky emerald and the scrollwork on the gold." The Chancellor reflected that the chunkiness of the emerald came from its substantial size, which made the gem very valuable.
"Your Highness, at risk of sounding like Charles Fusting, this is indeed most irregular."
The thought of royal jewels ending up in a pawn shop horrified him. Sometimes he needed to remind himself that he worked for people who owned palaces and had their own armies. Fabulous jewels were nothing but baubles to such people. "Like I said, I rarely wear it. I don't think it would be recognized by anyone outside the palace. It's not doing me any good by sitting at the bottom of a drawer. How much do you think I could borrow against this ring?" Calron's mind was racing to think of how he could discreetly, with the utmost discretion, have someone approach a merchant banker with a large and distinctive ring.
"Your Highness, you could easily borrow enough funds to keep your guard in the Thralren for years. This ring is, in fact, far too valuable to..."
"Now, use this one. I may need additional money in the future, and I don't want to keep going back to the banking houses. You can arrange it."
"If you insist, Your Highness. Certainly, I can handle this discreetly."
"Thank you. As part of your discretion, you will not mention this to my mother."
"I will have to tell your mother the truth if she asks, Your Highness."
Ariana laughed. "Oh, she will, she will. Don't mention it until then. I rather like the idea of my mother waiting a while, thinking I'll come crawling to her for money." Walking slowly, so as not to spill anything, Corrin climbed the steps of the tower, up to Pedrus's study. It had taken him most of the day to prepare a special dinner for Pedrus. The cooks in the royal kitchens had looked skeptically at the strange foreign spices Martell had given to Corrin, and had turned up their noses at the scents as Corrin was cooking, but he thought it smelled and tasted delicious. The wizard looked away from the scroll he was studying, and sniffed the air, his eyebrows lifted in surprise.
"It can't be. Is that Tordala soup?"
Corrin set the tray down and lifted the covers to show the food.
"Tordala soup and chicken infierno. I think that's how you say the word, with corn cakes and rice."
The wizard almost trembled with delight as he lifted the spoon to his lips and tasted the soup.
"Oh, that is splendid. The pepper is perfectly roasted, just a hint of sweetness. There is a new cook from Estara in the royal kitchens."
No.
Corrin shifted from one foot to the other, embarrassed.
"I made it."
"You?"
Pedrus looked at the food, then cut off a piece of chicken and closed his eyes as he tasted it.
"Perfection. Perfection. Where? When? How did you learn to cook? to cook food from my homeland.
Do you know Martel Vazan? He works in the stables. He and his wife Isela are from Estada, from Tos Heridas.
Pedras shook his head.
I don't know this Martel. Tos Heridas is in the far south of Estada, a long way from my home in La Murta. I didn't know one of my countrymen was here in the castle.
He showed you how to cook?
No, his wife Isela showed me. I hope you like it.
Like it?
The wizard rose from the chair and embraced Corin in a bear hug. When he sat back down, Pedras had to brush away a tear.
Thank you, Corin. People don't. They don't think of wizards as being human.
We are.
We have parents and homes, and some of us have families, too. I had a family, one time. I have a granddaughter named Isela, although I haven't seen her in a long time. She is probably a grandmother by now.
Pedras ate another bite of the chicken.
Ah, this reminds me of home. Sit down, eat.
Corin wasn't much hungry. He'd been snacking on food while he was cooking it, but he got a bowl of soup and a corn cake.
You had a family, sir?
The words were hardly out of his mouth before he feared whether he should have asked such a personal question. Lord Salvo was so often friendly that Corin sometimes forgot about being merely a servant.
Yes, I was married once.
Pedras's right eyebrow raised in question.
You're surprised. Don't worry, most people are. When I was a young and foolish wizard, feeling full of myself, and not yet aware of the great responsibility that comes with great power.
The wizard paused to give Corin a sharp look, although Corin couldn't imagine why.
I was in the court of King Manelo of Estada. I fell in love with a girl there, one of the king's nieces. My master, Sidol the wizard, warned me against it, but she was so kind and gentle. We met when she saw a butterfly knocked to the ground by a passing carriage. She held it carefully in her hand and brought it to me, asking if I could heal its broken wing.
Corin waited while the wizard was lost in thought. After a minute had gone by, Corin loudly dropped his spoon on the table.
Sorry, sir. You were saying?
Huh? Oh, yes. The butterfly. I healed it. The wing was only bent, not broken. And she brought it to the window, and it flew away. Arpoza. That's the Estadan word for butterfly. That's what I called her after that. Arpoza. We had four children. They grew up to be good people, all of them. My grandchildren, too, all good people. I had 17 grandchildren.
Had, sir?
Pedras took a deep breath, composed himself, and ate another spoonful of soup.
Yes. Had. They're dead now, most of them.
Corin, how old do you think I am?
Well, sir.
Corin considered what to say. Adults seemed to be offended if people thought they looked old.
Your hair has grey streaks, so maybe you are 50?
But I've heard wizards live a long time, so maybe 70.
Pedras shook his head.
Corin, I am 182 years old. Wizards age slowly. We can use the power of the spirits to renew our bodies. So, I remained young while my Arpoza grew old. I was able to slow her aging, at a great strain to my powers, but in the end she passed, as we all will some day. So, you see, Corin,
My master Sidol was right. It is not wise for a wizard to marry a regular person. It can only lead to heartache. And it can be cruel for your love to see you remain young and healthy while they become old and frail. My children have all passed, and most of my grandchildren also. When my last child died, I left the Stada to come here and dedicate my power to defeating Isidore. That is my life now. That sounded terribly sad to Corrin.
Yes, sir.
That's enough speaking of the past. We have this delicious food. Let's enjoy. Cara Falca was in a foul mood. Rumors of Arianna roaming around the castle with Corrin had reached his ears, and he was jealous. How could the Crown Princess choose to spend time with a commoner boy like Corrin instead of royalty like Kaer? Corrin was nothing but a servant. He didn't even have a family. Kaer was not the only person in the castle who didn't like to hear of Arianna spending time with a common servant. Duke Falco had ordered Kaer to become friends with Arianna, and Corrin was in the way. Niles Forn decided something had to be done to get rid of Corrin. The man's scheming little mind had considered having Corrin kidnapped, but since the boy was under the wizard's protection, such a plan was far too risky. No, this needed a careful plan, not something to be rushed into. He would start by making the castle an unpleasant place for Corrin to live.
"He's coming. You know what to do,"
Kaer whispered as he stepped back into the shadows. "We'll take care of it, Your Grace." The boy Niles Forn had chosen for the task was a nephew of Baron Pendran, a vassal of Kaer's father. Uhtred was only a year older than Corrin, but big for his age, with a round face and curly brownish hair. He had been trying to grow a moustache, but the hair on his upper lip was sparse, like a brown cat had rubbed up against him and left some fur behind. "That stupid farm boy won't know you're involved." Uhtred Pendran and three of his servants swaggered out into the courtyard talking loudly and tossing a ball between them. Corrin immediately sensed the group was trouble and moved aside, but one of the boys ran next to him to catch the ball. The boy pretended to trip and fell into Corrin, knocking them both to the ground.
"Watch where you're going!"
Uhtred shouted as he sprang to his feet. Corrin stood up warily and brushed the dirt off his clean shirt. He had been on his way back from the palace after having lunch with Arianna and looking at old maps, which Arianna loved to do.
"Me watch out? You're the clumsy one. Watch your mouth when you're speaking to your betters, boy!"
Uhtred snarled, and his servants laughed as they surrounded Corrin. Corrin didn't recognize Uhtred, who had arrived at the castle only a week earlier.
"Better? How? Better at tripping over your own feet?"
Uhtred's eyes narrowed. Now he was genuinely angry, not play-acting for Kaer.
"You're the wizard's brat, aren't you? Corrin?"
"Corrin Bladewell."
"What I hear is, you're just Corrin,"
Uhtred snarled.
"You don't have a family name because you don't have a family. Your family dumped you on the side of the road. Ha! What kind of scum were your parents?"
Before he could think, Corrin jumped at Uhtred, knocking him to the ground and pounding the bigger boy with his fists. The three Pendran servants joined in, punching and kicking Corrin until they were pulled apart by a guard.
"What's this?"
the guard asked as he held Uhtred by the collar.
"Release me," Uhtred demanded. "I am the eldest nephew of Baron Pendran."
To Corrin's surprise, the guard stepped away from Uhtred.
Sorry, young sir. I didn't recognize you.
The man scowled at Corin.
Corin, I expected better of you. Brawling in the courtyard? You be on your way.
He attacked me,
Utri protested.
I demand satisfaction. It is my right. I am a Pendran, and he is a common servant.
The guard, who was also a common servant, was used to dealing with fights between the boys and the castle.
Yes, the law is on your side. So, if you want to fight, you can fight in the sparring ring.
Corin had never been in the sparring ring, where soldiers and guards trained. Kyr had invited Corin to watch him spar, but Corin had never been inside the ring. The guard opened the gate and said gruffly,
In you go. Just you, Utri. You'll not bring your friends along this time.
I get to choose the weapons,
Utri pointed out.
He hit me first.
The guard was surprised. He assumed the two boys would fight with their fists.
What's your weapon?
Swords,
Utri said with a smile. He was good with a sword. The guard frowned, then snapped his fingers.
Fine. Sword you want, sword you'll get.
He opened the weapons locker and pulled out two wooden padded practice swords. Utri took one, tested it for balance, and cut the air with a series of strokes.
It'll do,
he announced, with a wink toward his servants. The guard handed Corin the other sword.
Have you ever used a sword?
He asked in a low voice. Corin shook his head. Other than play fighting with sticks, the only weapons he'd ever held was a knife or a bow. Swords weren't any use on a farm.
I can't tell you much in a short time, but even with the padding, these swords can hurt,
the guard warned. Normally, you'd be wearing a padded jacket, but as this is a duel,
well, you'll have to do your best.
I'll stop the fight if you are hurt bad.
Then the guard stepped outside the ring and closed the gate behind him. Utri held up his sword. Niles Fawn's plan had not involved Utri whacking Corin with a sword, but Utri was enjoying the change in plan. He would teach the servant boy a lesson, and then the Falco family would owe the Pendrans a favor.
Do you yield?
Utri had never known anyone to yield before the fight had begun, but it was part of the rules that the question had to be asked. Corin gritted his teeth.
Why was he fighting?
Utri had only told the truth about him. He had no family. But the smug Pendran boy had insulted Corin's parents, who were good people. It wasn't their fault they had to rid themselves of such a troublemaking son.
It's cold out here, but hell will freeze over before I yield to you.
Utri grinned. This was going to be fun. Corin held up his sword the way he had seen Kyr get ready to fight. Utri suddenly lashed out, sweeping his sword at Corin's face. Without Corin realizing what he was doing, his right hand raised his sword and blocked Utri's sword, knocking the other boy back. Utri stepped away, warily. Corin had blocked him. Blocked him so hard that Utri's arm hurt. The servant boy must have had combat training. Utri had intended to toy with Corin, smack him around until his whole body was bruised. It was not going to be that easy. Utri swept the sword up again, but at the last moment switched the sword to his left hand, aiming at Corin's exposed ribs. And again, Corin's sword moved so fast it was a blur, this time hitting the flat of the blade against Utri's left hand, and Utri dropped the sword.
Ow!
Utri shouted, cradling his injured hand.
That hurt!
Oh? And you weren't trying to hurt me?
Corin asked.
Was sword fighting this easy?
It didn't look easy when other people were fighting.
Do you yield?
He asked with a smirk.
Or do you want me to smack you again? I can do this all day if you want some bruises.
Utri's ears burned. A Pendran yield to a servant boy. He lunged for his sword, picked it up with his right hand, and stabbed at Corrin's legs. Corrin knocked the sword aside, and Utri grabbed for his legs, tackling Corrin, and the two boys fell to the dirt, rolling around and punching each other.
Enough!
A man's voice roared. It was the royal weapons master, a tall, gruff man, who was never seen without his well-worn, stiff leather combat vest.
You!
He pointed at Utri.
You're done. Step outside the ring.
Utri started to sputter a protest, but the weapons master grabbed him by the front of his shirt and tossed him toward the open gate.
You lost, boy. Be grateful I stopped the fight before you got hurt, or made an even bigger fool of yourself.
The weapons master served the regent. The Pendran family meant nothing to him.
And you!
He pointed at Corrin, and he picked up the sword Utri had dropped.
Who trained you to fight like that?
No one, sir,
Corrin replied, surprised.
You're either a liar, or you're the best natural sword fighter I ever saw. On guard!
Without another word, the weapons master stabbed the point of the padded sword directly at Corrin's throat. The blow never landed, for Corrin's sword flicked up and knocked it aside. But fighting the weapons master was not like fighting spoiled Utri Pendran, for the man was not discouraged. The force of Corrin's sword caused the man to turn to the left, and he spun with the movement, his sword sweeping around to catch Corrin off guard. It didn't happen. Corrin's sword was waiting for him when the man turned, and the weapons master staggered backward, trying to catch his breath. Corrin's sword had caught him under the ribs. The fight went on. Weapons master against servant boy. Sword clashing against sword, until both had sweat dripping down their brows, despite the midwinter cold. A crowd had gathered to watch the spectacle. Word of the weapons master fighting the wizard's boy swept through the castle like a wildfire. The excitement finally reached the ear of Carlana, who, by chance, was walking through the castle with Pedras. Both hurried to the windows that overlooked the sparring ring. The man and the boy circled each other, swords drooping toward the dirt, their arms too tired to hold them up.
How can Corrin have a chance against my master of weapons?
Carlana asked the wizard in a harsh whisper.
You said he couldn't use his powers!
Pedras frowned. He should have anticipated this event.
He can't project his powers outside himself. Using a sword like that is within him. I can't block that.
Someone needs to stop this, before people figure out that Corrin is no ordinary boy!
Carlana leaned out the window.
Hold! Drop your weapons!
Hearing his regent's voice, the weapons master dropped his sword to the dirt. Corrin was so tired that he was slow to respond, until the sword fell out of his hand.
The boy fights like a demon, Your Highness!
The weapons master gasped between breaths.
His technique is terrible, but I've never seen anyone so fast. Except you, of course, Lord Selva. Does the boy have a bit of wizard in him?
Carlana exchanged a warning glance with Pedras.
This is exactly what she was worried about.
Oh!
Pedras exclaimed.
A wizard? Corrin? No, he is a farm boy, and a slow-witted one at that. But, since he is my servant, he wouldn't be much use guarding my tower while I sleep, unless he could fight, now would he? I cast a spell on the boy, so he won't trip over his own sword.
The crowd, mostly soldiers and guards, murmured at that remark. Could the royal wizard cast a spell on them also, to give them such lightning speed?
I know what you're all thinking, and the answer is no. You think casting such a spell is easy? I don't have the energy to cover all of you. You lazy slugs must learn to fight the hard way.
The weapons master bowed to the royal wizard.
Lord Salva, since the boy is your servant, would you mind if I trained him? He is fast, but unskilled.
Pedras stroked his beard, then nodded.
When he has time, yes, it would be good for him to get some exercise.
When Karin left the sparring ring, Utri was waiting.
You didn't beat me.
The boy glared at him.
It wasn't a fair fight.
I never said it was. The next time you want a good spanking, you know where to find me, Lord Putrid. Bring your friends. There's plenty more where that,
Corin pointed to the angry bruise on Utri's left cheek,
came from.
He brushed past Utri and his gang of servants, who instinctively stepped back warily. He was famished and sore all over, even though the weapons master had barely touched him with his sword. When he walked out into the courtyard, Kaer ran up to him.
Corin, I'm sorry about Utri. He's a bully. Baron Pendran is a vassal of my father. I can ask for Utri to be sent home.
No, I need to fight my own battles.
Corin knew there were many Utris in the world. Somehow, he had to deal with them.
Besides, I don't think Utri will want to fight me again. After today.
He grinned at that thought. Corin was still in a daze over how fast he was with the sword. Kaer held on to Corin's arm.
You need to be careful. Pedras is using you, and he doesn't care if you get hurt.
What do you mean?
He put a spell on you, without telling you. Who knows what else he's done?
Pedras wouldn't hurt me, Corin protested.
Kaer shook his head.
Corin, you think Pedras is your friend. He's not. He's the royal wizard, and you are his servant. That's all you are. You're not the first servant Pedras had in that tower.
Corin blinked. Of course Pedras must have had other servants before him, but Corin had not thought much about it.
What are you saying? What happened to the others?
I hear most of them ran away. Some, nobody knows what happened to them.
Kaer hinted darkly.
You be careful. Pedras is so powerful, he may hurt you without meaning to. But don't think he cares about you. You're just a servant. And Ariana may like looking at old maps with you, but never forget that she is the crown princess, and you're a commoner. Karlana will make sure Ariana never forgets that.
I just want to be your friend.
Karin, I may be your only real friend in this castle.
Kaer lied.
Because I don't need anything from you.
Corin shrugged. A minute ago, he had been happy that he beat Utri and held his own against the weapons master.
I guess. If Pedras wants to hurt me, what can I do about it? Like you said, I'm just a servant. I don't even have a family to run home to.
I think you need to be ready to run away. If something bad happens. Ariana can't help you. She's not yet queen. And Karlana doesn't like you.
Karlana had never really been friendly to Corin. Having been thrown out of one home, he didn't like the idea of running away from another. Corin sighed.
Here.
Kaer reached into his pocket and pulled out a leather pouch.
Take this.
Corin looked in the pouch. It held 4 gold coins. He was shocked.
I can't take this.
He had never seen so much money in his life.
Kaer waved his hand as if gold coins were nothing special to him. Take it, take it. If you need to run, you'll need to run far and never come back. I'd like to offer you sanctuary, but if the Falcos defy the regent, it would be treason.
Okay, I'll hold it someplace safe, and hope I never need it.
Kaer frowned.
I think you will.
And sooner than you think.
If Niles Fawn's plan worked, Kaya said to himself, Corin would need it soon.
You gave him what?
Niles Fawn asked, shocked.
It's only 4 gold coins, Fawn.
The Falcos can afford it,
Kaya added defensively. Besides, we want Corin to go far away, right? How far do you think he would get without money? 4 gold coins is a good investment.
Humph. Your reasoning is sound, young sire. But I think your reason is not. You feel sorry for this boy.
Corin didn't do anything. It's not his fault,
Kaya protested. Fawn snorted. Corin is not your friend. His own parents didn't want him. I think you forget sometimes that Duke Falco is not only your father, he is your liege lord, and he gave you an order to get rid of Corin, so Arianna will need to find someone else as a companion.
I know my father's orders, Fawn.
Knowing and obeying are two different things. You need to do both.
That evening, Niles Fawn scribbled a letter to Duke Falco, informing him of the day's events. That Corin had been wizard-spelled to be blindingly fast with a sword was dismaying, but no great problem. The castle had been made a less pleasant place for Corin. Kyre had warned him he was in danger from Paedras, and Corin was now thinking maybe he needed to run away in the future. Now, all Fawn needed to do is give Corin a reason to think the time to run was now. But, Fawn added to the letter, I fear your son, although following my instructions, is sympathetic to the Bladewell boy. Kaya must take care, lest he become soft.
Softness, Fawn knew, was not allowed in the Falco family.
Chapter 8 Corin had thought he could train with the weapons master when he wanted to, when he had time and felt like sparring. No such luck. Paedras had worked out a schedule with the weapons master, and Corin now had to report to the sparring ring 3 times a week, in addition to his own work for Paedras. And caring for Thunderbolt, and working in the stables to pay for the horse's keep. And the 3 times a week tutoring in writing, history, and mathematics that Paedras had insisted for Corin. With the weapons master, there was training with the sword, of course, but also Corin learned to use a shield, a pike, a spear, and a bow. The bow he liked best. He had always been deadly accurate with arrows when hunting, and now he never missed a target. Even when Corin was on horseback and the target was also moving. The sword training was the worst. Instead of a chance to show off and whack the weapons master with a practice sword, the training involved what the weapons master called forms. Endless repetitions of swinging the sword around and placing his feet in exactly the correct position and bending his elbow just so until Corin's whole body ached, and his arms felt like they would fall off from weariness. Corin thought that, after training with the weapons master and the man's stupid forms, that he was going to curl up in the form of a ball, and be stuck in that form forever, because he was so stiff and sore. Between his 2 jobs, caring for his horse, and combat training, Corin decided he needed to forget about silly things like looking for a lost cornerstone. Corin was cleaning up after the wizard's dinner when he lifted a knife and balanced it on his finger, like the weapons master showed him to do with swords.
Sir, he asked, I'm training to use weapons.
Hmm? Yes, the weapons master tells me you are learning quickly.
The weapons master had sounded overjoyed to have such a talented and obedient student,
rather than the clumsy, arrogant royal children he was used to.
"Yes, sir. I am doing my best, sir."
And Corrin had the bruises and aching muscles to prove his efforts.
"Am I going to get a real sword, sir? To protect you?"
"Eh? Why would I need you to protect?"
Pedras sucked in a breath. Having to remember all the lies he'd told was getting to be all too much.
"Oh, certainly, yes, of course. Now that you are gaining skill, it is time for you to get a sword of your own. Yes, yes, that is a capital idea."
Pedras hoped to venture out with the army in the summer, and would take Corrin with him. For that, the boy needed weapons of his own, weapons he was familiar with, rather than whatever second-hand gear the army had available. Perhaps the weapon master had... No, Pedras had a better idea. Corrin was working very hard. The boy deserved a reward. Something nice, but something that didn't seem like an indulgence.
"A sword is a very personal thing. It needs to feel right in your hand. You should start with a short sword."
The wizard saw Corrin's face fall, so he hastened to add, "The short sword is carried by most archers as a secondary weapon.
With your remarkable skill with a bow, it is unlikely you will be called upon to fight at short range."
And, if Pedras could help it, Corrin would not be called upon to fight at all, until he mastered his immense magical power.
"Tomorrow, go to Hedemer's in Linden. You know where the flower fountain is, near the clock tower? Hedemer's shop is down the street to the north, a block or two. I haven't been there in some time. Ask people when you get near. Tell them you want to buy a sword from the dwarf."
"A dwarf? Hedemer is a dwarf, sir."
Corrin had seen dwarves around the castle. The dwarves had an ambassador who visited the castle at least once a week from his home, just outside the main gate. And he'd seen dwarves in Krebs Ford. A wagon came through the village to use the bridge once a year or so, and would stop outside the Golden Trout to sell their fine metalworking. But Corrin had never spoken to a dwarf. Twice he had gone with his father to buy items from the dwarves. Their metal plough blades lasted almost forever, his father had said, and needed sharpening only once each season. The first time, Corrin had stayed under a tree with the family wagon, while his father bargained for a good price. The second time, Corrin had shyly stood beside his father, watching the dwarves with fascination. Dwarves were, to his surprise, not as short as he expected. Most were a good 4 or more feet tall. It was amusing to see some of the less tall humans stretching themselves to full height when around the dwarves, when that height was not much more than 1/2 foot taller than the visitors. A few dwarf women Corrin had seen were lovely, petite with bright eyes, looking no different from miniature human women. It was the dwarf men who were somewhat exotic, being much more broad than a human man of the same height, and stronger. The stories Corrin had heard of dwarves being inordinately proud of their beards appeared to be true. All the dwarf men Corrin had seen had thick, luxurious beards, some adorned with beads or even gold ringlets.
"Yes, he is the chief of his clan here. He operates a metal shop. Take this."
The wizard pulled a gold and silver token out of his pocket and gave it to Corrin. It felt heavier than it should have, and was rather warm.
"And go to Hedemer, tell him I want you to have a proper sword. He can put it on my account."
"Oh, yes, sir. Thank you, sir."
Corrin awoke early the next morning, eager to get his chores done and go into the city to see the dwarf. By 2 glasses before noon, his horse had been exercised, groomed, and fed. The stoves in the tower were well stocked with wood and burning nicely. The wizard's dining area had been cleaned up after breakfast, And the wizard himself was happily puttering away in his laboratory, sipping from a fresh pot of coffee. Corrin walked out through the main gate, greeting the guards, feeling the token Pedras had given him laying heavy in his pocket. Even in winter, the city of Linden was busy. Wagons rolling about the streets, the markets open, although the people selling wares were bundled up against the cold, huddling over small stoves while they waited for customers. Many of the merchants knew Corrin and called out to him, offering roots, spices, and other such things he often bought for the wizard. But this day he only smiled and waved back. When he arrived at the fountain in front of the clock tower, he wandered north up several streets until he found the building that must belong to the dwarf. The front of the building looked like the entrance to a cave. Corrin wondered how the dwarves had brought such large, heavy pieces of stone through the city streets, until he realized the stones were fake, being made of plaster. He ran his hand over the fake rock, which needed to be repainted in spots, where the bare plaster showed through. Suddenly, the heavy wood door was yanked open, and Corrin was face to face with a dwarf. Or face to chest, since the top of the dwarf's head came up not quite to Corrin's chin. The dwarf shrugged.
"You humans think all dwarves live in caves, so we added this ridiculous facade on the building. You have business here?"
he asked gruffly, looking skeptically at Corrin's rough workman clothing.
"Yes, sir," Corrin said, unsure how to address the dwarf. Or man, since the dwarf was a man, with a grey beard that draped halfway to his belt. "Lord Salva sent me." He pulled the token out of his pocket and held it up.
"The wizard!"
the dwarf exclaimed in surprise.
Come in, kind sir. My name's Leggard, at your service. Why, we haven't heard from Lord Salva in many seasons. Too long."
He held the door open just wide enough for Corrin to pass through, then closed it firmly.
"My old bones can't stand this cold any more."
They entered a dark, low-ceilinged chamber that Leggard said, apologetically, was also just for show, through a larger door, and into a large, cheery room, with a cozy fire in the stone fireplace, and windows in the ceiling. Corrin thought that having windows in a roof was strange, but they did not let in a lot of light. The dwarf bowed to a figure sitting in a large leather chair in front of the fireplace.
"Hedimer, Lord Salva's servant to see you."
Hedimer stood up. He was younger than Corrin expected. Perhaps very young, for Hedimer's beard was a mere dark shadow on his face. Although he had lines on his face, so he was old. Or was that just the way dwarves were? Corrin must have been staring, for Hedimer self-consciously ran a hand over his chin.
"Odd-looking, isn't it?"
The dwarf chuckled.
"My face feels naked without it, and cold, too. Bad time of year to be without a beard, I tell you. Magnificent beard I had, until an accident at the forge 3 days ago, and singed half of it off. Figured it best to shave it all off, and start over."
Yes, Master Hedimer, sir. I'm Corrin, sir, Lord Salva's servant."
Corrin's own hand touched the wispy fuzz on his own face before he realized what he was doing. He checked hopefully for beard growth in a polished metal mirror every morning, but so far he had been disappointed.
"Leggard, get our friend Corrin here a drink. We have some mead,
Hedimer considered Corrin for a moment.
"You are rather young, aren't you, eh? Hard for us to tell with you humans sometimes. Leggard, put some tea on to brew. I could use a cup myself on this cool day. Corrin, come sit by the fire while we discuss what brings you here today."
Corrin explained about his need for a sword, and Hedemir nodded when he heard the wizard had suggested a short sword.
Hmm. A